You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.
Want to learn how you can make smarter decisions with your money? Well, I've got the podcast for you. I'm Sean Piles, and I host NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Our show features our team of nerds, personal finance experts in credit cards, banking, investing, and more. And they'll help you make the most of your money while cutting through the clutter and misinformation in today's world of personal finance. You'll get clarity on strategies to help you build your wealth, invest wisely, shop for financial products, and plan for major life events. Listen to NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Aaron Thomas, and this is the Earn and Invest Podcast.
I did something early on in my marriage that many would frown upon. I was panicked, overly concerned by, of all things, medical liability. You see, although rare, as a doctor, malpractice lawyers could sue me for greater than my insurance limits and thus go after my personal assets. Rare, but I had heard the horror stories. So at the beginning of our marriage, I transferred all our assets, every single penny, into my wife's name. Every bank account, every real estate building, everything outside of my retirement accounts, which were protected by the state. I put all my chips down on our marriage. We had no prenup. I hadn't even heard of a postnup. 24 years later, I've only been involved in one lawsuit that was dismissed. And oh, by the way, I'm still married. Am I a genius or a fool? Aaron Thomas has represented everyone from athletes and superstars to business professionals and stay-at-home parents. After helping hundreds of clients secure favorable divorce settlements, Thomas realized he'd rather help clients build healthy, successful marriages founded on transparency and communication through loving and fair pre- and post-nups. After attending Emory University, he graduated from Harvard Law School. Aaron Thomas, welcome to Earn and Invest. I want to repeat this line from your bio. Healthy, successful marriages founded on transparency and communication through loving and fair pre- and post-nups. It begs the question, does having a prenup agreement make for a happier, healthier marriage?
It can. It certainly can. It's going to require the right kind of prenup or postnup, as you might imagine. I mean, even just saying that line, I can imagine is going to raise a couple eyebrows with your listeners, but the devil's in the details, which I'm sure we're going to dive into.
We definitely are, but let's talk about you first. How did a divorce lawyer, of all things, become a prenup proselytizer? I mean, isn't that kind of against your financial interests?
That is correct. That is correct. We can make a whole lot more money on divorce cases. We have kind of a captive audience, and you know the profit margins are certainly higher. But I've done my share of divorce cases over the course of a long legal career. I got out of law school 22 years ago now, and I noticed the same things cropping up over and over again in my divorce cases. And really, it was around the time that I was going to get married. My wife and I were going to get married. She's also a lawyer. And we were thinking, how do we not mess this up? You know, how can I avoid becoming one of my clients down the line? So when it came time for us to get married, my wife had been previously married. This was my first time, but we'd waited, I'd waited till a lot later in life than a lot of my friends had to get married. So we kind of knew that we were going to do a prenup. If for no other reason than to take the possibility of a courtroom divorce off the table for all time. But we kind of wanted to go further and say, what if we were going to write, quote unquote, the perfect prenup, that not only kept us out of a courtroom, but actually helped our marriage, like avoided all of the pitfalls that I'd seen my clients go through over the years. What would that look like? How could we instill these values of transparency and communication that I think are so critical to successful marriages in our agreement, you know, when we got married, both what we put on paper, but really our like agreement to each other. And the end result was, you know, what I've been kind of pushing out there in the world. I started telling friends and family and other people about the things that we put in our prenup, counseling provisions and, you know, meetings to talk about the finances. And people started telling me, you've got to tell other people about this. You got to make this available for the public.
I want to talk in a moment about how you became a divorce lawyer in the first place, how you decided to practice that type of law. But before we get there, you've been talking about the we, and in this case, you're talking about you and your wife, but you first started talking about the we, and I got the feeling you were talking about your law firm. So I'm wondering, was there some resistance when you started transitioning to saying, okay, we can do our divorce work, but let's really put some time and effort into building up this prenup practice and helping people have healthier marriages? Were there people in your practice who kind of looked at you and said, yeah, I don't know if that's so profitable, or I'm not sure that really aligns with what we're trying to do?
Not really. I mean, one, I was the boss, so
that helps.
That helps. But I think that certainly the people who practice with me in my law firm, they'd known me over the years. And, you know, really, if you talk to a lot of divorce attorneys, they would tell you, if you got them, you know, being honest, they would tell you that having a prenup or a postnup is a great idea for a lot more people than actually go and get an agreement. I don't think that my team thought it was off brand. I think that skepticism was, could you do this as your only practice? Certainly, you know, in the very early years of me kind of developing this idea of the positive prenup, 2015, 2016, so several years ago, there was really no idea that this was going to be a standalone practice by itself. This was going to be something that was just kind of a side project, maybe a little bit of a passion project alongside a traditional divorce law firm's work. But it is just, it's evolved over time. You know, a couple of years ago is when I kind of cut the cord and decided this is what I want to do full time. You know, I'm not just passionate about it, but at some point it actually became the divorce work that was inconsistent with the message that I wanted to promote, which is don't give your money to divorce lawyers. You know, don't put yourself in a position to pay that money to divorce lawyers. And it's a little difficult to say that when you are, you know, making a living off of divorce work yourself.
Yeah. When I thought about doing this episode, the first thing that came to mind is Danny DeVito playing the divorce lawyer in War of the Roses from, what is it, the 80s or the 90s? And I couldn't, I went and I looked at YouTube trying to find it this morning, but I remember in my mind, Danny DeVito is sitting with, I think, the gentleman who's going to be using him for his divorce. And he's like, before you pay me $5,000 an hour to rip your life apart, is this what you really want? And that's always the picture I had of divorce lawyers, which doesn't appear at all to be like who you are. How did you even get into this field in the first place? When you came out of law school, were you like, I'm going to be a divorce attorney?
No, absolutely not. I went into law school assuming that I was going to work for the biggest, baddest firm in New York City and make a ton of money and live happily ever after. And then I spent my second summer, my 2L summer, for people who know kind of the law school lingo. I spent my 2L summer working for the biggest law firm in New York City. And it was quickly apparent that it was not for me. The hours, the lifestyle, the type of work, it was not a fit. And so I graduated from law school really not having any idea what I was going to do. Harvard had a low income protection plan that basically paid your loans if you were doing kind of low paying or nonprofit work, public interest work. And so I went and spent a couple of years at Habitat for Humanity working in-house, just figure, you know, I'm doing something good and I can figure out what I want to do. And what I wanted to do was be in the courtroom. And so initially my next move after that was I became a public defender. So I was representing the indigent population who were charged with crimes. And, you know, my job was to make sure that they got the same kind of representation that people with money did. Right. And that was very satisfying and I enjoyed doing it, but it was also not very high paying and my student loans weren't going anywhere. And so when I got recruited, I got decently good in the courtroom and built up a, you know, pretty good reputation of trying cases. And if you're not doing criminal law, the next thing that puts you in the courtroom more than anything else is family law. It's divorce work, custody work, child support. And, you know, a big time divorce lawyer here in Atlanta recruited me to join his firm and said, you'll make a lot more money. You'll get to represent some, you know, fantastic clientele, and you'll still have to get to do what you do well, which is go to court. And so I kind of jumped into it, not really knowing anything about, you know, divorce work or having any kind of, you know, attraction to, you know, the work of divorce itself.
That's quite a jump, going from being a public defender who's working with the indigent to becoming a divorce lawyer who, in many cases, you're dealing with some of the rich and famous. Were the lives of the rich and famous more instructive, or kind of what did you learn in that transition?
A ton I learned in that transition. I mean, you nailed it. I went from representing the poorest of the poor to some, you know, kind of the richest of the rich. And I think what was most shocking, it may not be for you, but that the rich people had the exact same problems. I started doing family law in 2007. And so I was there. My first couple of years of family law coincided with the financial crash, the real estate crash in the United States, and that big recession. And that hit wealthy people extremely hard because they had the real estate investments. They had the stock market investments. I realized that so many people who, you know, had these big, successful looking lives, that it was a house of cards on the inside, and that, you know, there were people who made $50,000 a year who actually had more financially sound principles in their lives than people who were making $1 million a year. And those people really got exposed when they, you know, had sucked out all the equity on their $2 million house and were paying $8,000 a month on an interest only mortgage. And then, you know, the market crashes and that $2 million, that home that was, I'm putting quotes up here for people on audio, that was worth $2 million is now worth $1.1 million. And they're over leveraged. Yeah, I saw a lot of that. And just that people with money had the same exact problems in their interpersonal relationships that a lot of people of moderate income did, sometimes maybe more. You know, sometimes the money may have actually exacerbated some of their interpersonal conflict. So, yeah, it was a real lesson on a lot of fronts.
So in order to solve some of these problems, let's talk about these marital agreements. And I'm saying agreements because there's the prenup and then there's the postnup. I had never even heard of a postnup until I got into the financial world. But before we get there, is there such a thing as a good divorce? Because I think it's such a negative word in society, divorce. Most of us don't have an example, a narrative that suggests that you can go through a divorce and it can be reasonable.
I think that there is a wide spectrum of how you can go through a divorce. I mean, certainly there are nasty ones. Ones that last a year and a half, 2 years. I've worked on a divorce case that has gone up to 4 years, including the appeals. And so there's certainly a way to do it that is seriously destructive. You can also have what some people will call a conscious uncoupling, somewhat of more kind of an amicable divorce. There's a big rise in the collaborative divorce world where rather than looking at each other as adversaries from the very beginning, which is kind of your traditional divorce case, that you come together and there's a heavy focus on mediation and identifying, you know, what are the most important needs of each spouse going through this divorce. And so, yeah, there are a lot of people who have an uncontested divorce and they go through it and they divide everything pretty cleanly and they work together to raise their children if they have them. But, you know, there's a wide spectrum in terms of, you know, I don't know that I would term any of them a good divorce. You know, they're all painful, right? I mean, you're talking about the end of a relationship that you thought was going to last for the rest of your life. And there's always going to be some pain associated with that. But there are ways that to go through a divorce that turn that pain into the most excruciating experience of your entire life. And there are ways to go through it where you come out on the other end and say, you know what, we're both better for this. And I've learned some lessons. And it doesn't mean that we have to hate each other or drag each other down or certainly spend a couple of years in a courtroom because our relationship didn't work out.
So let's talk about some of those ways to try to minimize that pain and discomfort. Let's start with the basics. What is a prenup? What is a postnup? Explain it to someone who's never heard of these things before.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for asking that. So, you know, a prenup is essentially just the set of rules that defines your financial relationship with your spouse. And that is both during the marriage and, yes, if the marriage comes to an end. And I always like to point that out because most people hear prenup and they immediately think you're planning your divorce case before your marriage even starts, right? You were all a prenup is planning your divorce case. And the truth is a lot of what goes into a prenup is about how you're going to manage your finances during the marriage itself. What are you, how are you structuring your finances coming into the relationship? You know, at a very basic level, you know, what's mine, what's yours, what's ours. Today, couples get married older than they did in the past. And so, you know, getting married at 30 is kind of average now. Getting married at 40 is not unusual at all. And so couples today come in with assets. They come in with retirement accounts and bank accounts and credit cards and student loans and really much more complex finances than our parents or our grandparents did. Learning how to merge your finances in a way that does not breed resentment or arguments is trickier than just opening up a joint bank account and throwing everything in there. And so getting, you know, couples getting clear on are the student loans that I'm bringing in, is that joint, you know, is the retirement that I'm bringing in, is that mine or is it joint? And I think a lot of people say, well, everything is all in one bucket, you know, where everything is joint, you know, we're not that type of couple. We're 100% in, we're all together. And I'll usually start with is that really true? Is that your phone or is that cell phone in your hand 50% along your spouse? And you'll say, no, of course this is my cell phone. Okay. So you do have some things that are yours. Your spouse has some things that belong to them. And then maybe most of your assets are in that joint column, but at least let's have that conversation. Let's do it intentionally. A big part of it is, what about the money during the marriage? How is the money going to flow? You know, are you going to set up a joint bank account and everything goes in there? Are you going to have separate accounts and your income goes in there? And then maybe you contribute to a joint bank account that pays for the joint expenses. Or maybe the income all goes in the joint account. Any spouse gets an allowance that goes into their separate accounts for the separate spending. And so there are many ways to do it. And that is certainly part of a prenuptial agreement. And then, of course, you are going to have terms that talk about how do you separate without giving 25% of your net worth to divorce attorneys, you know, through litigation. That typically just kind of follows those lines of, you know, what did we agree is ours? What did we agree is yours? What did we agree is mine? And it can be as simple as I take what's mine, you take what's yours, and we split what's ours 50-50.
And there's no mistake about it. We talk about prenups almost in the same way we talk about wills. You have a prenup, whether you codify and write it out or not. It's just there's a default. Explain that to people because people don't realize this. And it is the same with wills. You have a will, whether you write up a will or not. It's just not one that you put together.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. If you are married, you have a prenuptial agreement. You are agreeing to a set of rules that defines your financial relationship. But if you don't write your own prenup, you are agreeing to what I call the default prenup, which is the rules of the state where you happen to live. Those laws were likely written 100 years ago, maybe longer. They were written for a different population. They were written for a community of people who got married at age 20. And there was one household earner, and they had one bank account between the two of them. And of course, everything was considered, you know, joint. And so the default of the default prenup is that everything that either spouse has, asset or debt, is considered joint. The further that we have gotten away from that 20-year-old with zero money, zero assets, zero debts getting married, the less likely that that default prenup is going to work for your relationship. And so, you know, in a lot of my cases, I would say 50% of my cases, people learned what it was that they signed up for. They learned that what was in that default prenup that they had signed on the day that they got married, they learned that when they were going through their divorce case. And the rules are not intuitive. And so people were shocked. They say, I had this house before I came into the marriage. I paid every mortgage payment from a bank account in my name only that was funded from paychecks in my name only. And you're telling me I have to split this piece of property in a divorce? And I'd say yes, because your paycheck is considered marital property. Your very paycheck is considered marital income. And so you get your first paycheck after the date of your marriage. I call it the one paycheck rule. And you take that first paycheck after the date of your wedding. And what does anybody do? You put it in that house you had coming into the marriage. You put some in your checking. That's in your name only. You put some in your retirement. You put some in your savings account. You pay down, you know, the different debts on the assets that you have. And every one of those things that first paycheck touches is now considered commingled. And the default for commingled property is it's up for division. A lot of the money, billions of dollars are spent on divorce attorneys every year in the United States. And a lot of that money is going to fight that exact misunderstanding that people have coming into their marriage. And they say, I had $250,000 in my retirement account before I got married. And now the court is saying I have to split it all unless I can prove how much of that initial investment still exists today. Now I've got to hire a team of forensic accountants and a team of lawyers. And we're going to spend the next 2 years spending, you know, $200,000 on lawyers to try to claw back what I think is $500,000, you know, from my retirement account. And all of this, to me, is a result of people not being clear as to what prenup they were signing coming into their marriage. We all just accept the default. Not all, but most of us accept the default. And a lot of us, we would be well served by taking a much more intentional approach and sitting down with our spouse and saying, all right, how is this going to work? You know, what is mine? What's yours? What's ours? And, you know, yeah, in a worst case scenario, how would all these things be divided?
We're not going to get into all the details of a prenup. This show is not long enough for that. But are there some main elements? Like when you look at a prenup in its whole, can you be like, there's these three elements and these how they work? Or how does it break down?
Yeah. I like to break it down into kind of before marriage, during marriage, after marriage, right? So before marriage is, you know, what are you bringing in? For a prenup to be enforceable in all 50 states, each spouse has to disclose all of their assets and debts. And typically, you'll do that by preparing a net worth statement for each spouse that gets attached to the back of the agreement. And for a lot of couples, this is the first time that they have actually seen what their partner has in assets and debts. They're in black and white. I think there's a huge difference between talking about it generally and getting actual numbers down on paper in black and white and deciding, you know, what are these, you know, how are these things going to be classified that we're each bringing in? Are they going to remain our separate responsibility if it's a debt? Are they going to remain our separate asset if it's an asset? Or are we putting these things into the joint pot? So that's kind of like number one is where are you? What are you bringing in? And how are we classifying those things? Then there's during the marriage. How is the money going to flow? How are we structuring our bank accounts? Do we consider our paychecks to be marital property? Do we consider our paychecks to be separate property? And so a lot of times people will do what I call a title-based prenup, which is anything that we put in joint names is joint property. Anything we put in separate names is our separate property. And that's intuitive for a lot of people because that's what people assume. You go through your whole life with this one rule. If your name is on a bank account, that bank account belongs to you. If your name is not on a bank account, it does not belong to you. When you get married without a prenup, that no longer applies. The title of something no longer applies. And so a lot of people say, all right, if we put something in joint names, we intend for it to be joint. If we have something in separate names, it's separate. And yes, we may put all of our money into joint accounts, but at least we're doing that intentionally. And then there is after the marriage, which is essentially the big parts are asset and debt division. How are we going to divide what we've accumulated? And alimony. Is one of us going to pay money to the other one after the marriage for living expenses or to bridge the gap until the dependent spouse is financially independent, as well as how are we going to go about that? And what steps do we have to take to before we get there? And I think this can be one of the hugely powerful parts for couples because, you know, a typical couple, you know, that I work with will have agreements that before we even can file for divorce, we've got to go through a number of steps. We've got to do a certain number of months of counseling. We've got to do a certain number of sessions of maybe co-parenting counseling if we have children that are under the age 18. And then we're going to go to a mediation and we're going to work with a trained specialist to help us, you know, come to an agreement on how we're going to transition to this post-marriage state without going broke and airing our dirty laundry in a courtroom. And that is a huge focus of mine, is keeping people as far away from a courtroom as humanly possible as they're going through a divorce. And yes, if you do actually end up going through a divorce, you've got an agreement that spells out, you know, what's what. But before you even get there, you know, making sure that, like you said earlier, is this really what you want to do? Can you go to counseling? Have we given this relationship every possible chance that we can, that, you know, that we have to give it before we call it quits on the relationship? And then, yes, if we do split up, can we do it in a way that is thoughtful and intentional, not just based on the negative emotions of the end of this relationship, and do it in a way that preserves our finances, preserves our sanity, preserves our ability to be able to co-parent effectively, you know, after the marriage? I just think that this is an opportunity for couples to protect themselves against the worst parts of, you know, relationship ending. Yes, from a financial aspect, but from way, way more than that, from an emotional aspect, from, you know, the ability to co-parent, from a mental health aspect. And so that's kind of why I'm so passionate about the ability of prenups to improve relationships and the way that we treat marriage.
We are talking to Aaron Thomas. After attending Emory University, he graduated from Harvard Law School, and he has represented everyone from athletes and superstars to business professionals and stay-at-home parents. And we are talking prenups and postnups. We're going to take a short break. I'm Doc G, and this is the Earn and Invest podcast. All right, so most of us know the bad news already. If you were using Mint as a budgeting app, it has shut down. But the good news is there's something better, and it's called Monarch Money. I started using Monarch Money myself about 5 months ago, and I knew immediately that I liked it more than any other budgeting app I had ever used. For one, it focuses on collaboration. This is easy to share with your spouse, your partner, your financial advisor. And it's aspirational. Not only can you look at your current budget, but what do you want to buy? What do you want your goals to be? You can focus on those in Monarch Money. It's the next generation of personal finance apps. Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. Furthermore, you can create custom budgets, track progress toward financial goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/earn. Again, that's monarchmoney.com/EARN. What I like about this app is it's intuitive, easy to use, quick to sign on. It's collaborative, as we talked about. It's customizable. The idea is you can use this app the way you want to use it. And the reason why is the Monarch Money team is customer focused. They are focusing on you, me, and all the other people who want to use this app to live a better financial life. After trying out Monarch Money for myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, listeners of this show will get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/earn. That's monarchmoney.com/EARN for your extended 30-day free trial. You know what? I love our meals from Factor. My son started getting them about a year ago when he needed a quick alternative to meals on the go. But where we've really enjoyed them is we've been remodeling our kitchen. That's right, we've had no access to our kitchen for the last few weeks. And some nights, we just had no idea what to do for a meal. That is where Factor came in. We would just pop the meal in the microwave, and 2 minutes later, we'd have a fantastic meal. You can do the exact same thing, and there's tons of variety. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week. These are chef-prepared meals, and let me tell you, they are delicious. No fuss, no mess. You just put it in the microwave, and 2 minutes later, you have a meal. This is tailored to your schedule. You can customize your weekly meals with the flexibility to get as much or as little as you need. Head to factormeals.com/earn50 and use your code EARN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code EARN50 at factormeals.com/earn50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. Aaron Thomas has represented everyone from athletes and superstars to business professionals and stay-at-home parents. After helping hundreds of clients secure favorable divorce settlements, Thomas realized that he'd rather help clients build healthy, successful marriages founded on transparency and communication through loving and fair pre- and post-nups. And we are talking about how to protect yourself in a marriage, how to dissolve a marriage if necessary, and how to bring up that difficult conversation of the prenup and the post-nup. Aaron, this is a great question. How do you bring up the prenup question? Because there are a lot of people, and I think if you're not married yet, you've got to face this. How do I bring this up? But you know what? If you're already married and you don't have a prenup or something has changed in your life, how do you bring up the postnup conversation? I feel like flummoxed by both of those.
No, it's a great question. As you might imagine, I've given a lot of thought about how to successfully broach this conversation. You know, I didn't have this difficulty because my wife and I are both lawyers. My wife had been through a marriage before. And so for us, it was kind of a no-brainer. But I think what I've realized over time is that a lot of the objection to prenups and postnups comes directly from the stigma associated with the term, right? We hear prenup, and number one, we think it's something that it's not. A lot of people, they hear prenup and they immediately think that there is one kind of prenup and that prenup means everybody keeps everything that belongs to them. You know, that there is no sharing of the finances, that you are completely separate financial entities. And I try to explain to people that a prenup is just a contract like any other contract. The ones that hit the news certainly are the billionaire, oil baron marrying the 19-year-old, starlet who wants to keep, his money from the young gold digger. And the ones where people are just saying, look, let's just agree that every dollar either of us earns during the marriage is 50-50. So if we don't make it, we're splitting everything. 50-50. Those aren't going to make TMZ or the tabloids. And so no one hears that there is such a thing as a fair prenup, or that you can use a prenup to avoid a fight in court about how you split what you come together. You can lock yourself in to a 50-50 split just as easily as you can write in that we're completely separate when it comes to our finances. And so when it comes to having the conversation about a prenup, I think that it is best for couples to not lead with the word prenup or postnup, but rather to say, what do we want to accomplish? Talk about what you want to accomplish with the prenup in the first place. So for example, would it be a good idea for both of us to be transparent about our finances? Like literally put everything that we have coming in down on paper in black and white and decide what do we consider to be joint and what do we consider to be separate? Most of us live with kind of three buckets. We have things that are ours. We have things that mine. We have things that are yours. And we have things that are ours in a relationship. Even if it's just kind of informal, this is my wardrobe, that's your wardrobe, this is my car, that's your car. And then we may consider everything else that we have to be ours. And just having that one conversation, I think, can be hugely beneficial for couples. And then doing the same thing with, what about the money that we earn during the marriage? Are we both going to have equal access to it? Do we both get a certain amount of spending money from the total family finances? If I'm the higher earner, does that mean I get to spend more? Or do we both have kind of the equal ability to spend? And I think that, so many couples don't have these very basic conversations that are part of a prenup. And couples, say, yeah, that's a great idea. How about, should we have an annual meeting? I call it the annual shareholders meeting. Should we have a meeting in our household where we sit down once a year or maybe even once a quarter and we talk about the state of the household union, the state of the household finances, and talk about, are we happy with our spending? Does our spending reflect our values as a couple or as a family? Do we have big expenses coming up that we want to plan for? Can we set aside some money for travel? Can we set aside some money for, the real estate property that we want to purchase? And intentionally putting these things in place. And then, yes, having a conversation about, can we just agree now, what would be fair, if things don't work out? And I think when you have gone through all of these steps before you get to kind of, that last piece, that most people are going to agree to all of the individual component parts of a prenup or a postnup, and you've never even said the word. But then I think it's a much easier transition to, you know, I want to commit to this agreement that we both have agreed is fair. You know, I want to put this down in writing. You know, I don't ever want us to be in a place where, God forbid, our relationship comes to an end, and now we've forgotten all of these agreements that we made to each other. And I know that I'm going to be a lot more fair in a situation when I'm doing it from a place of love and from a place of trust and a place of wanting the best for you as my spouse and hopefully my life partner forever. And, you know, can we lock this in now and take these issues off the table for all of eternity rather than leave things up to chance? Like, and we've all seen what's happened with our friends or our relatives. Everyone's got a parent or an uncle or an aunt or a cousin or a sibling or a best friend who's gone through a painful divorce that if they could go back in time and put some things in place to avoid it, they would like to do it. And I think if you come from that angle, it's going to be much better received than, you know, dropping it on your spouse a month before the wedding. I need a prenup. You know, there's a better way to do it.
So I'm going to do something uncouth here. I'm going to compare pre and postnups to home inspections, right? So if you're a real estate investor, you know, there's a common saying you always get a home inspection, but there's a caveat. If you're going to knock that house down, I mean, rip the whole thing out and start all over again, there's probably no reason to get a home inspection. So I'm wondering, is there the same caveat when it comes to prenups and postnups? Is it ever like, we're so poor when we start, it doesn't even make sense to do it? Or in someone like my case, I've been married for 24 years. Our net worth now that we've built together is hundreds of times what it was when we met. Does it make sense for me and my wife then to go and codify our financial relationship in a way that we haven't previously and do a postnup? So again, the question is, are there people who just don't need this stuff?
Yeah, no, I think that's a great question. For me, I think every couple is better off having a prenup or a postnup in place than not having it. And here's why. You know, one is there's a very common misconception of we're both broke, we're getting married, we have nothing to protect, which would be a valid reason to skip the prenup if the reason for getting the prenup were to protect your premarital assets. I think that for most couples, a much more important reason to think about getting a prenup or a postnup is divorce insurance. It is to take the possibility of a messy divorce off the table. As someone who has tried divorces, I do not recommend them. I do not recommend messy divorces. I would not get one if you can help it. And that is one of the best things for a prenup, is taking the possibility of a messy divorce off the table. And I'm kind of joking about it, but the truth is what you're doing is you are agreeing upon the boundaries of your financial relationship with your spouse. A lot of us, we just go in and it's all based on assumptions, you know, and I have seen what happens when a couple breaks apart and one spouse assumed that their retirement just belonged to them. And the other spouse based their career decisions for the last two or three decades on the assumption that that retirement belonged to both of them. And you can imagine what happens when that couple goes through a divorce case. And so just getting clear on those things, you know, number one, can take a divorce off the table, take a messy divorce off the table. But number two, it's going to help your relationship while it's going on. Because a lot of the, you know, arguments about money is, you know, oh, you're spending too much, or, you know, like you're not saving enough. And a lot of the arguments are about, you know, kind of like how much money does each spouse get to spend? How much do we have? You know, and a lot of times the higher earner believes that, you know, they may never say it out loud, but they believe that they have the right to do more spending. They don't truly believe that everything is ours and that we both have equal access to the money. And if those couples kind of made that commitment at the front end that says, okay, if you're staying home with the kids, or you are, you know, structuring your life to cater to my more demanding career, then the deal that we have is we are 100% together on both this. We both have equal access to money. We both have equal access to the information about the money. We both can spend as much. We respect each other enough to check with each other before we make financial decisions over $500, over $1,000, what have you. And a lot of it is, you know, a lot of the things that broke apart the couples whose divorces I did were failure to get on the same page when it came to their financial relationship, which you have, you know, like a lot of us, you know, we get married and it's this magical thing and we attribute it to like, it's just supposed to work out, you know, and it feels almost gross to talk about like the other side of the legal side of the relationship, the financial side of the relationship, you know. But you didn't just go get married before a priest or a rabbi. You applied for a marriage license at a courthouse. You filed something with that courthouse. You are taking advantage of, you know, the tax benefits and the other benefits that come from being married. So like, you know, inherently that you were entering into this legal and financial relationship. And I'm just saying, let's put it out all out there on the table and let's get explicit. Let's talk about it. And so, yeah. And, you know, so the couple who has no money coming in, I would say that, you know, the messiest divorces are not about, you know, protecting the premarital assets that one spouse having coming in. The messiest divorces are about fighting over what the spouse accumulated during the marriage. And the reason that those fights are messy is because the couple was not aligned. And the failure to get aligned doesn't just cause an issue in your divorce. It causes issues in the marriage itself. You can look at, you can go Google and look at the statistics about how much married couples fight about money. It's like the number one or very close to the number one argument that married couples have. And a big part of it is because of a failure to get aligned on the terms of your financial relationship. And the other reason that I am a big proponent of like everyone could use a prenup or a postnup is because the underlying terms of the default prenup is essentially that if you and your spouse can't agree, then a court agrees. The court makes a decision for you. And so getting married without a prenup or a postnup is putting your entire life savings in the hands of a judge who in 41 out of 50 states can divide your marital assets based on what they think each spouse's role was in the marriage. You know, who was the more virtuous spouse or who was, you know, and some judges you get in front of and they think the person who worked the more, who worked the most, they get the most of the money. Other judges are a straight 50-50. Some judges, they'll dock you 10% of your assets if they find out you had an affair. Other judges are like, I've seen it all, you know, like I separate out like, you know, like your sexual fidelity and like your access to the money, you know, in a divorce. And so very often couples have like the determination of their entire net worth is going to be that decision be made by a judge who, number one, doesn't share their values. And number two, is going to hear from each of you talk for about 3 hours. You're going to sum up the last 30 years of your life in 3 hours. And that person is going to make a decision. Getting a prenup means you make that decision. You control what happens to your assets in a worst case scenario. And the right time to do it is when you love each other, is when you're on a good terms, and when you do agree. And so do I expect that every married couple out there is going to go and get a postnup? No. But do I think that you should have that conversation? Should you have sit down and like, just, you know, can we just be clear? Is everything ours? Are there things that you consider yours? Are there things that I consider mine? You know, can we just have this conversation? What would happen in a worst case scenario? And at least make sure that you're on the same page and have an opportunity to have that conversation. And then, yes, if necessary, you know, if you think that it would be a benefit to you and you want to take the possibility of a divorce off the table, put it in a prenup or a postnup.
So I want to talk about pop culture for a moment, because when I think about specifically TV and movies and why we have such a negative feeling about prenups, typically, there are two things that we see portrayed. One is kind of the controlling spouse who puts all sorts of gotchas into the prenup to trip the other spouse up, A. And then B, this idea of hiring the lawyer to break the prenup so that a spouse who leaves can get something that wasn't already codified there. How common are both of these things? Like, are prenups ironclad, and are people using this maybe in a negative way to control their spouses?
Yes. Some of the bad reputation of prenups is absolutely deserved because of how certain people have used them, you know, and the more horrific the use of the prenup, the more press that is going to get and the more that we're going to hear about it. And that's what colors our perception of prenups. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, there are prenups, you know, that hit the news all the time. Kevin Costner just went through a very public divorce where, you know, at the end of his marriage, it was a 20-year marriage, 20 years. And his wife signed a prenup where she got $1 million, whether the marriage lasted 6 months or whether she had three kids by him, which she did, and the marriage lasted 20 years. And people look at that and they say, wow, he walked away with $400 million. She got $1 million. That was super unfair. To me, I see that and I say, She needed a better advocate on her side to negotiate it. That's not the fault of, you know, the contract itself. It doesn't mean that the contract is evil. It means she signed a bad one. Just like, you know, if you signed a lease that, you know, subject you to $10,000 late fee, you know, on the second of the month, you wouldn't say leases are evil. You'd say, wow, I sure signed a bad lease there. I mean, so that's kind of what I see there in terms of, you know, hiring the attorney to break the prenup. You know, prenups are relatively new in like a legal, you know, from a legal sense. They really kind of took hold in the 70s and 80s. And then the Uniform Premarital Agreement Act was enacted. And now 26 states are signatories to that. And now they're legal in all 50 states. I mean, there was a time where if you got a prenup in one state where they were legal, you could move to another state where they weren't legal and it would be tossed out of court. All of that was resolved pretty much 30, 40 years ago. And so prenups are upheld like any other contract today. But the reputation that, you know, you can weasel out of them for this, you know, that or the other still lives. There's really only three ways that a prenup gets thrown out. It's if it was under duress, you know, you held a gun to somebody's head. It was unconscionable at the time that it was signed. Unconscionable meaning like more than unfair, but it's like, you know, the conscience of a judge, you know, could not enforce it. You know, one spouse is left a zillionaire and the other spouse is left on public assistance. You know, no, a judge is not going to enforce that. And then number three is kind of fraud or you fail to disclose all your assets and debts coming in. So if you lie and the other person, in reliance on what you said, signs this agreement, no, a court's not going to hold that up. But in today's day and age, it is, you know, assuming that everyone's telling the truth about their assets and debts coming in, it is relatively straightforward to write an agreement that is going to be enforced, that is going to be ironclad down the line.
Well, Aaron Thomas, I wanted to thank you for coming on the show today. The reason why I wanted to have this conversation is, look, financial problems ruin relationships. We know this. We know it is the cause of many, many divorces. On the other hand, people see prenups as a marriage destroyer. And what I love about your message is you're really talking about it being a marriage protector and certainly being open financially with your spouse or your spouse-to-be makes a huge amount of sense. And codifying that relationship so that you don't have to rely on the state to codify it for you and make decisions for you makes incredibly good sense. I want to end this episode the way I end every episode by asking you how people can get in touch with you if they want to learn more.
Yeah, absolutely. You can always learn more at my website, which is prenups.com. And I am on all the social media networks like YouTube and Instagram. I am Prenup Guy.
Aaron Thomas, thank you so much for coming on Earn and Invest today.
Thanks for having me. It's been great.
That's a wrap. Earn and Invest is now part of the Airwave Media Podcast Network. Visit airwavemedia.com to listen and subscribe to this show as well as other fine podcasts. I bet you're asking right now, why have Aaron Thomas, Mr. Prenup, on the Earn and Invest podcast? Of course, in this podcast, I love to have conversations adjacent to our finances. That's right. I don't only want to discuss just our finances, but also how our finances affect life. So I have many episodes that are tangential, but I want to stress right now, this episode is anything but tangential. First and foremost, we know this. Finances break up marriages. Arguments about finances, not being on the same page about finances, having unrealistic expectations about how you are going to spend, save, earn, and invest. These are all things that cause people to fight within a marriage and also get divorced. But what I really loved about Aaron Thomas's message is this idea that doing a prenup or a postnup is actually a loving thing to do to create a stronger marriage, because that big sticking point, that big thing that everyone argues about, our finances, can actually be codified before the marriage itself or within the marriage to make sure that everyone is on the same page. First and foremost, it's actually incredible, this idea that a big part of the prenup is that everyone puts together their own net worth worksheet, their own P&L statement, so that each partner knows exactly the finances of the other. This is amazing, and so many people don't do this in a marriage, and what happens is eventually they get married and they start digging into each other's finances and realize there's all sorts of debt or even net worth that they had no idea about. So think about how powerful it is as a relationship progresses, as you're getting close to the point of marriage where you can lay down bare all of your finances and you can look at them and discuss them together. The other big point is that if you do not do your own prenup or postnup, it's not like you don't have one. And this is the same thing with wills. If you don't write up a will, you have a will. It's just the will that the state puts in place for you. And it is the same with a prenup. If you do not codify your financial relationship with your spouse, the state has a set of rules that will become your prenup. And then if you decide to get divorced, you will have to follow the state's plans for what happens with your money. But guess what? These rules were made up years ago when generally you had a single male money earner in the family, and it was very basic and very attuned to the 1980s and 1990s, but certainly not to the 2020s. The other problem is whenever there's wiggle room there, you know who decides how money and assets are split up? The judge. And every state and every courtroom really has their own kind of judge, and there's lots of wiggle room in how they can decide how you should split up your money. You don't want this to happen. And that's why Aaron's message is amazing. I think his idea is not to help people get divorced, but instead to help people build stronger marriages. And one of the only ways to do that is to talk openly and cleanly about money, what money is coming into the marriage, how money will be managed in the marriage, and God forbid, if there is a breakup, how the money will be split up. This is a discussion from strength and not weakness. And I think more of us need to be having it. I know it's hard, right? Because for instance, someone like me, I've been married for 25 years and we never had a prenup. So it's a big question. Should we now be working on a postnup? I can't even imagine a life without my wife. I would have no idea of anything, much less the finances. But I have to tell you, Aaron has had me thinking about it just because it does codify and make things easier when it comes to decision making. I want a stronger marriage, not a plan for divorce. So I think it's something for all of you to think about. Certainly if you are not married yet, if you're thinking about getting married, if you already are married but have never put the relationship down on the page and talked about your finances, this is a great way to get started. This is a great marriage protector. So thank you to Aaron Thomas. And the other thing I want to mention is the Path to Purpose coaching program is up and running and going well. This is where I help people with issues like career, enough, and purpose. And let me tell you, I'm on Facebook all the time. And especially in Choose FI, I see all sorts of discussions about people who are trying to leave their job, people who've reached financial independence, and yet can't do it. They've got one more year syndrome. They're worried they don't have enough, even though the numbers tell them they do. If this is you, you are the kind of person I'm trying to reach. Go to earnandinvest.com/coaching. Again, that's earnandinvest.com/coaching. That's the Path to Purpose coaching program. All right, I leave things running just for a few minutes to catch anything we talk about after the show. I think this is such a great conversation. And again, for people who don't know you, I met you at the Economy Conference and you gave a talk and I was just floored by how positive it felt. And so we in the financial world have been talking about prenups and even postnups forever. But it's never been cribbed in such optimistic, positive language. And that's what I really loved about your message and why I wanted to have you on the show is this is a really good tool. And I think we forget how we're really good at having financial advice were really good. A lot of people even go to, you know, marriage counseling before they get married, or they see their priest or rabbi. They go through all these things. But a lot of times we don't necessarily do the same work, especially financially. And that's exactly what a prenup does, is it makes you do that financial work and maybe helps protect us against what is breaking up relationships all the time. And so I just want to thank you for having that positive message. And you are, you know, in a sense, a rarity, someone coming, I think, from the divorce lawyer field who's really talking about something completely different.
Yeah, you know, it was not lost on me that, you know, you are a hospice doctor who's seen a lot of people go through death, and it has given you a unique and informed perspective on how to live. And I kind of, you know, think of myself in the same way. Like, I've watched the death of like 1,000 marriages. I've watched so many people come through divorce, and it has informed me and, you know, my life on like how to successfully navigate marriage. I think that we're well positioned, you know, to give advice, even though it might not seem, you know, the most straightforward path.
Yeah, experiential learning is kind of a bitch, isn't it? You don't want to learn about death by going through death. You don't want to learn about divorce by going through divorce. You'd much rather learn about them from a hospice doctor who wants to talk to you about your finances, or a divorce lawyer who wants to talk to you about your prenup.
Yeah,
definitely. Yeah.
You care about your money. Of course you do. So why aren't you listening to SoFi Daily? This podcast will keep you updated on the latest news in the stock market and how it could impact your financial life. Stay on top of what's happening. Listen to SoFi Daily wherever you get your podcasts. That's SoFi Daily wherever you get your podcasts.